Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guests today are Advantage sports bettor Frank B. and all-around Advantage guy Anthony Curtis. Gentlemen, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
We're here again.
Here we are.
haven't talked to you since last week.
2 weeks ago, yes. Three, whatever.
We had a question that was initially directed on the Super Bowl, but it wasn't really Super Bowl related. So we saved it for this show rather than our Super Bowl prop bet show. Richard and I, along with Michael Shackelford, received an email from a player telling us about a situation at Bovada. I planned to ask this question to you guys on the air, but before our air date came, Shaq sent his own response to the email. I asked Shaq if he minded if we spoke about what he said, and he said no. The player, Charlie, wrote two bets that he had. He had New England most first downs plus 160 and Philadelphia plus 3 most first downs minus 115. The player, Charlie, wrote, "Here's an example of Bovada cheating by not honoring a wager. There was no email or note informing of this, just a change in my account. This is a perfect middling situation. In my case, with my small total bet of $750, I could not have lost, but instead would have won anywhere between 15 cents and $863. What would you suggest I do with regard to my non-canceled bet? Cancel now that the middling opportunity has been removed, or what?" Michael Shackelford responded, "I'm afraid every sports book that I'm aware of reserves the right to cancel a bet if they've made a line error. This has happened to me a few times. If you don't want the other side, I would explain the situation to Bovada, and they'll probably let you out of it. It might also flag you as an arbitrage player, which most sports books hate. It's up to you if you want to take the chance. Agreed, it was poor customer service to not send you an email about the cancel bet, but this doesn't get anywhere near the bar to what I call cheating." Frank B., Anthony, do you agree with what Shackelford responded?
You want to go first? Because I'm going to be rather...
Yes, they have the right to cancel a wager. This is not something that I... always felt good about. You know, this was a lesson learned hard for me when I started betting sports and betting more money in sports. You can make a bet. You think you've got a good shot at some sort of a middle. You bet the other side, and they cancel one side, and you're stuck with it. Would they change, you know, would they let him out of the other side? I mean, should he keep it? He should keep it if he thinks he's got the best of it. If he doesn't, he should try to get out of it. Would they let him get out of it? I don't know. It depends on the book and, you know, how they feel about things. But, you know, this is something you've got to be aware of. When you see something that's just so juicy and you know it's wrong, you've got to really think, do you want to make that wager? I've done it, yes, in the past, and you get all excited and greedy about it, and you end up with something you don't want, or you just, you know, they cancel the bet. Or worse, Frank will talk about, you know, they can free roll you, and I'm sure he'll explain that right here.
Yeah, and I'm sort of on the opposite side. In other words, not necessarily the bookmaker side on this, but you have to use common sense when you're betting these type of things. You know, first off, that was an error, and it's easily explainable. I mean, all I did was read it. I don't know anything more than what you just explained. But what happened is they flip-flopped the favorite. You know, New England to have more first downs in the Super Bowl is the favorite by about, you know, about, they're about 60%, so it's minus $1.60. And you would think that anybody who bets props for any, you know, nominal amount of time, they know that. They know that there's the error. That's the mess up one. Okay. So what you're doing is you're taking a shot. And they say, oh, I'm just putting my arbitrage combination together. Well, you're betting an airline. You know they made a mistake and you're going to stick it to them. So just imagine that he called. I know Shaq said maybe call him. I'm going to be sarcastic here, but this is imagine the conversation on the phone when you call. And this is what they're thinking when you're explaining it. Oh, hi. I made a couple bets on your site and you canceled one. You know, it's the one you made a mistake on and I decided to stick it in. And, you know, since I'm such a nit, I went and bet the other side of it. with you just to point out to you how dumb you are, because I'm able to bet two things and make money at the same time. So I was wondering, could you be a sport and just cancel the one that I no longer have action on? Could you be a sweetheart and do that? Because, you know, I'd appreciate it, because I really don't want to risk any money, because that's not my game. Now, that's not what he said, but that's what they're thinking when he's explaining it. And, you know, it's like, you know, it just depends which way you look at it. And when you're dealing with these offshore books, if you're not playing on credit, you're posting up. And you got to understand who has the power there, and it's not you. If they're holding the money, they have the leverage. So not only can they do what they did to this guy, they could take it a step further and wait till the bet's graded and go, well, we did pretty good on it on all those guys who took shots on us. We're not going to cancel that. Oh, but if they lose it, they go, well, you know, it's a bad line. We'll cancel. You're setting yourself up to get free rolled. And if you don't understand that much, you know, if you just think, well, I'm in here stealing or just really they're dumb and I'm getting away with something, you're not getting away with them. You're shooting yourself in the foot. So, you know, when it comes to betting airlines, I don't do it anymore. I mean, when I was first starting out, I used to think the same thing. I was like, well, they won't notice. Yeah, most of the times they notice. And when they do, you get free rolled. So it's what looks like a great bet is a bad bet.
We do that all the time now, not just with Frank, but other guys I know. We find a bet and it's wrong. It's way off, you know, too far off, or they flip the favorite or something like that. And our conversation is, do we want to take it? And almost all the time now it's no, just leave it alone. Just don't touch it. And I mean, if you know the people there, you can actually get a little bit of currency with them by alerting them to it. By the way, you guys know you got a bad line here? And all of a sudden, you're kind of you gain some you know,
little credibility
power with them. You know, you're not a guy out to kill them. You're kind of a playing on the square with them. So
because
you can use it that way.
Even here in Vegas, they can cancel it too.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No.
No. If you have a ticket and you want to be a hard ass about it, you can insist that you get paid. Well, listen. Okay, I'll take that back. Over the last few years, they can cancel it on the app. Whether it's legal or not, I don't know, but they do it. But if you go and you get a ticket, a paper ticket, they have to honor that. Now, like I was just talking about, who holds the hammer? Who has the leverage? Well, you sort of do if you don't intend to ever play at that book again. You can force them to pay. And they will. They'll have to pay a paper ticket. But what happens is as soon as they notice that they've made a mistake, they flag the ticket. They lock it out of the system so that nobody can come to the window and cash it without somebody coming over and saying, okay, let's see what we have here. They go, oh, you're the guy. You're the guy who thinks Duke should be plus 17 against Tulane, right? Okay, well, let me explain something to you. You can cash this ticket, or we can call it even. We both made a mistake, and you can continue to bet here. You know, a lot of times when you bet a mistake and you insist on paying, well, you're not welcome to bet there anymore. So it's your last bet there. So, I mean, that's the only leverage they have is to say no mas for you.
You get your sister to cash the bet. Let him cut her off.
Yeah, she'll be happy with you if you do that.
Well, I mean, assuming you get a non-player to
cash. Hey, listen, you can get sneaky. You can mail it in for payment and then start the whole process there, and, you know, so you don't have to look them in the face when you try to cash it.
The bottom line is it becomes a business decision. You know, that's at a certain point, and we have these discussions, and literally now – I went from, oh, this is wonderful, to 9 times out of 10, we go, never mind.
Exact number I would have said, about 90% of the time, you don't make the bet. Even in town. I wouldn't make anything untoward on an app because I don't want to lose my app. If you make one bad bet, they go, oh, look what Frank did. Okay, well, that's enough for him. Tell him to come get his money. You know, it's not worth it.
Yeah. I'm curious about something Shaq said in there about the books hating arbitrage players. Why would they – that just seems crazy to me that they would hate that. But, I mean, I guess it's the same reason that casinos hate guys who come in and bet opposite each other on the crap table.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I had a casino, I would love to have guys come. They both are giving up the same house edge, you know, that if they weren't together.
They see it as shooting an angle. That's what it is. I mean, even though they're giving up the same amount, you know, the main thing was like with coupons. Where people would go with coupons and they'd play both sides, the do and the don't with the coupon. So, you know, the same result, they've got the same expected value, but it reduces their variance like crazy. So they get to walk out with money. Well, if they do it enough times, they're going to walk out with money overall anyway. But the casinos see it as taking an absolute shot at them, and it's just, it rubs them wrong.
Enlightened bookmakers don't have a problem with that. Who has a problem with the guys that just like your street corner bookies who, you know, say, oh, you bet both sides against me. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, all right, I won't do that anymore. But the online entities, the ones that don't like it, for the most part, they don't like it because it's an avenue for achieving rollover without really any risk of losing, having a big loss. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, without having a big loss, yeah, but you're still giving up your, you know, the EV on each bet.
We used to well, what he just said, achieving a number. You know, we used to do that when I was playing with big tournament teams. You could qualify by X amount of action on a game. So the powers that be would always say, then let's do that. Let's play opposite sides. I was always against it. I was like, why? We look dumb and we got the same EV. Like, well, because we're, you know, we're a little bankroll challenged at this time and we want to reduce our variance and you want to get to a spot, a number quicker.
But that's okay. You can bet one side and Frank can bet the other side. And after it's over, you guys agree to split the money. And that way you're not, doesn't appear like you're betting opposite sides, but you have a gentleman's agreement,
right,
that you are. And so that would be invisible to the casino.
Well, invisible if they don't know you're together. I mean, sort of. Or if there's not too many people on the table.
Well, you don't hold hands with each other, do you? I mean, how would they know?
No, but you could both be on the same program where you're trying to run chips through, you know, you're just trying to, both these guys are program players, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got to then for the rest of your life, you've got to not talk to that guy or whatever. They're going to eventually put it together. You'd be surprised how quickly they do put it together. Now, you can get away with it. You know, I mean, we did it and you could get away with it a couple of times at a place. I didn't think it made any difference. We had enough bankroll. We could have faded it and played it regular. And maybe you don't want to play both guys on the pass at the same time. You maybe play at different times. So, you know, that reduces a little bit of the variance there. It's just it's a decision that people make. But I can just tell you that if you're caught doing it, the casinos are going to get mad at you. They don't like that.
But and Richard, you're absolutely 100% correct. It doesn't make any real mathematical sense for them to be upset about that. But they do.
Yeah. I mean, if they understood what it is they're doing, what they should be looking at is not that you're betting opposite each other. It's that they're inviting you to the tournament based on the action you're giving them.
Right.
If you're betting opposite him and they think that that action's not good enough to invite you, well, then it doesn't matter if he's there betting the other side. You shouldn't be invited.
Exactly. You know, everything that everyone's saying here is correct. What I'm saying is the casinos do not think that way. They look at it as an angle shot.
Yeah.
So when we get to, you know, back to making business decisions, you have to look at it and factor that into your equation of should you or should you not do it. Do we want to keep a welcome mat out here? This might pull the welcome mat out from underneath us, so maybe we oughtn't to do that. That should go into every business decision in a casino.
But there are also times where line movement happens sufficiently, it starts out at 6.5 and it ends up at 4.5. And of those four and five or five and six aren't, well, six is a key number. That would be enough to bet both sides. And so.
But you probably have no edge on the 4.5 bet. You're just hedging your variance. Right? But your edge was when you bet the 6.5.
Depends on what it goes past. I mean, it depends on where you end up. I've done it before, and I've done it at the same shop. And that it doesn't bother me because I just go, well, I liked it here, and I like it here. And I like the 3 in the middle. Yeah, I've done that before. I did that in one Super Bowl. I had 3.5 and 3.5 both ways. I mean, I liked it. So I did that, and it landed 3. Yeah. But I mean, Frank will tell you better than I
He's
what they think
talking
about
it, too.
Yeah, but the example that you give, and then the one with the first downs, it was almost apples and oranges there. Because the one is actually an error.
Yeah.
It's a flip-flop line is what it is. It should have been Patriots minus one, or minus, obviously, one. What did he get? Plus 160?
Yeah.
So they had it like minus 180 or 90 was what it should have been on the other side. That's what it should have been. And I don't know. Maybe he didn't know it, but most guys would look at it right away and go, they screwed that one up.
All right. Changing subjects. We have an email from a player who has a friend who he thinks is the worst sports bettor in the world. His friend averages about 44% against the spread. The emailer recognizes that if he could take the other side of his bets instead of the bookie, the emailer would make a nice profit. He wants to know if there's any flaw in this logic.
I don't believe the guy can only pick 44%.
Well, this is, look, we talked a little bit about this beforehand, and this comes down to the question of, can anybody be worse than a coin flip, right? But That's based on, and Frank's shaking his head, yes, they can. And the reason is because we don't have a coin flip here. All right. What we've got is a situation where lines are not made to be a coin flip, which a lot of people think that's what it is the lines are made to, you know, perfectly handicap a game. They're not. They're made to split action. All right. So here's where we're not talking about a 50-50 proposition. And so, yes, a player could be worse than what we perceive as a coin flip betting against the line.
I believe he can be worse than 50%, but I don't think he can get down to 44. But the solution is really simple, right? You just be the bookie for the guy.
Yes.
Right. And that's what a lot of guys I know do. He goes, this guy never wins. I'm supposed to call these bets in, or I'm supposed to – I just keep them, you know?
Yeah.
And you know what? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, technically,
other than against the law.
Yes. That's what I was just going to say. Technically, it's illegal. I mean, because you're now booking action. But I mean, if a guy calls me from out of town and wants me to make a bet for him, and that's a heck of a lot of work for me to go out and, well, I mean, it's not. But I mean, it can be if I'm really, really busy. So there are times that I say, sure, I'll get it for you. And I don't even look. I'll just look at what is the prevailing line, and I'll just book it. And you book it with the juice. So yeah, you should book that. If you're booking with the juice, you probably got the edge, you know, 95% of the time against whoever you're booking against. And we're talking about small money, and the cops and the law aren't going to mad. You know, they're not going to be mad. And it's the same thing as when I was a kid and I was a better poker player and would go to a poker game, or I was they'd want to switch it to blackjack, and I'd say I'm the dealer. You know, you're just using your superior knowledge here. You're not doing anything that's wrong or untoward or unfair to your buddies either, I don't think.
Yeah, when it comes to the question, basically the question is this guy that much of a mush that I could, you know? But the thing is, he probably is, but not for the reason, you know, it's not like bad luck. It's the way he goes about selecting games. And I like to say, like, you know, he's the guy that always falls for it, because it's no secret that they make the line that they think it is should be statistically raw number, and then they shade it. This guy falls for the shade every time, apparently, because you have to get terrible line value a great deal of the time to run anything close to that bet. Like, I sort of question if he's really 44%. But there are guys that, you know, they can tell you exactly what happened last week and in great detail, how great the Chiefs were, you know, and how bad the Patriots sucked. And Patriots are no good this year. You got, you know, that's the kind of mentality that takes place when these guys just they take what they saw most recently, and then they run for it for their next bet. And the bookmaker does just the opposite. We're going to charge a tax for everybody who thinks like that, you know, for the prevailing public perception of this event. Okay, this is what it is, so we're going to charge a little bit of tax. This guy pays the tax every time, apparently. And that's when he said, can you be anything different than a 50-50? I say, yes, you can. If you fall for it every time, yeah, you're going to be under 50%. You're always going to be paying that tax on the shade for an event where the public has a definite opinion.
So the answer to that question is yes, he should book that action. And I mean, even if, especially if he's going to book it with a VIG, yes, he should book that action.
I would just add, I had a couple of friends that were exactly like this 20 years ago.
You knew what he was going to bet when he called.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, and I knew he only bet the games that were on TV. That's where you already know. If the guy just tells you that, you know that he can't be playing with an edge, right? He's going to bet all the games on TV, and he's going to sit and watch and sweat them. And the one thing I would add was I ended up having to stop just because I knew that it would end up ending the friendship because he was getting in too deep. And
that's the other thing. Don't tell him you're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, I've done this a lot. I shouldn't say this on the radio. I've done it too much because I'm usually busy. I mean, often I'll bet it off for them, but I just do it and I never tell them. I just tell them, you know, you owe me the money because it's on my account. I bet it for you. Don't tell them, because it's a good way to really lose a friendship.
Yeah.
If you're beating them.
And so what I did was, you know, he settled up with me, and then the next season rolled around and I said, you know what, I'm not going to be doing that anymore. I won't, you know. If I can find somebody else.
You're too nice.
Well, no, because eventually he was going to lose enough where he wasn't going to be able to afford to pay. And then it's.
Well, here's the other part of it, too. This sounds very self-serving, but I've been in this position as well. If the guy's losing the money to you, as opposed to somebody else, and he can't pay it, you can cut him a lot more slack than anybody else could.
Well,
and I have.
Yeah, well, yeah, but if he's got some bookie like that, they're going to cut him off, and then he can't bet.
Well, you should too. I mean, if you're hurting the guy, and then you should just tell him, I'm betting for you anymore. I mean, you know, this is all done. If he's going to lose the money somewhere, and you just know he's going to lose it, he might as well lose it to you for all the reasons that we said. And you should treat him like a bookie then and say, you lose too much and you're slow pay. And that hurts me with the people that, you know, I'm betting for you and it's coming out of my pocket and I'm fading this long stuff. I'm not taking your bets anymore. So you can be as magnanimous as you want in that regard too.
Yeah.
On this episode of Intervention.
All right.
Intervention with an edge.
On Saturday in late January, there was an opportunity at the Lucky Dragon for about meter money. What happened?
Well, that was, this is a real interesting story. There's a story about it in the current issue of the Las Vegas Advisor. It was that good. I was writing the issue, had a few days to go to deadline. And I got an email in my on my account from the Lucky Dragon that said, we are having a $46,000 plus drawing today. And I shook my head and said, Lucky Dragon's closed, and threw it away. All right. A few hours later, I get a call from Frank. He's like, we got to get down to the Lucky Dragon. And all of a sudden, the light went on over my head, and I went, oh, they're giving away some jackpot money or something like that. And I didn't pay any attention to this. I would have missed the whole thing. And that's where it began. They had money that they had to give away. There are, you know, certain laws and rules that you can't hold public money, and they were holding a drawing. Now, things got a little crazy from there. I don't know. You want to pick it up?
Well, yeah. No, I had, sort of the same thing happened to me. It's like, well, something's going on. I think we should go to this because – I don't think too many people are going to be aware of it. I mean, they've Lucky Dragon out of sight, out of mind. You know, people throw their cards away. People don't open their mail anymore.
You had to have your card. You had to have a card from the Lucky Dragon. You know, they were basically trying to give the money back to their customers. So you had to show up with a Lucky Dragon card, which a lot of people probably didn't keep it when it closed. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So you know, in case anybody doesn't know, it's quickly, when a casino closes or close it down with the intention of reopening, they have to go around and drag all the accumulated meter money above reset and put it in a separate pool and either give it away to the customers then, or if they plan on reopening, give it away, replace it when they reopen. They can't just keep that.
Meter money is progressive jackpots on
progressive
slots
Caribbean stud, things like that. So if something starts at 10,000 and when they shut down, it's at 17, there's 7,000 of public money that they have to distribute. So usually it's done on the last day or the last couple of days, like Riviera did it. They start putting it on different machines. And, you know, sometimes a place closes like the Sands and then reopens at a Venetian and they just replace it. But in this case, Lucky Dragon, you know, you remember they had a lot of machines and not all of them were, you know, if it was a statewide, it doesn't apply. But if it was internal or progressive, it was like, oh, okay, that added up to enough that it's worth going down there. How many people are going to show up for this? And I made the line, like I was telling you, you know, been making terrible lines in the last month or so. I said, 350 will show up, maybe. And everybody's like, oh, you're crazy. It's going to be way more than that. Well, the crowd, he and I differ on how many we think were there because we couldn't see everybody in the building because the line snaked outside into the valet area and twisted. Like they should have had those ropes set up, you know, like where they snake you in
would
to like check in for a
flight. Dragon tails normally twist, lucky or not.
Okay, so maybe that was a metaphor for you're going to get hit by the tail because in order to process all those people, which had to, I think, swipe, we wouldn't know it because we never got in. Hundreds of people, probably several hundred got shut out because they just weren't willing to wait to process everybody. They said, you know what, we said 5:15, we're going to pull the names. So at 5:15, they just started pulling names. And there were hundreds of people that had been waiting in line for a couple hours. Didn't care. They gave away the money and got out of there.
They just closed it off.
They said, we fulfilled our obligation.
Wow.
So everybody complained.
In the LVA, I just wrote, there are a lot of lessons to be learned here. And I mean, some of those lessons were, you know, this isn't 20 years ago. You know, something like this happened 20 years ago. And, you know, here's how square I was on this one. You know, he's thinking 350. I'm thinking, man, there might only be 50 people there.
Yeah, we got good EV.
Man, that's worth $1,000, man, to show up. I'm going to, you know, put the LVA aside for a few hours. I'm going to go do it. You know, not in this world. Not in this world. You know, with all of the social and everything else, people talking to one another. You know, second is, we did one good thing there. We did one real smart thing there. We assumed it didn't matter. If they're going to cut it off, we were way at the end of the line when we got there. If they were going to cut it off as they did, we'd have never got there. If they were going to let everybody in, they had to let everybody in. So we went, instead of standing in that line, we went around the corner and sat down and had some drinks at the bar around the corner. And we said, we talked to somebody whose wife was there and said, call us when we get to the end of the line. So, I mean, there's always a way to try to do these things better.
They canceled it. You know, so it was absolutely the right play, and they had Stone IPA at the bar, so I was a winner.
All right. Now, the two of you have partnered up in several times in football contests. Now, the football contests are over for the year, so what happened?
What happened was, this was the worst year we've ever had since we've started doing this together. We just barely missed everything. We had some deals with some players, so we got some money back, but we basically got beat up pretty good this year. That's the nature of tournaments and contests, though. These are high variance things. One thing that was interesting is that we didn't lose at everything. We lost at the big pay tournaments, but we won at the, Pick the Pros. We won one week of the Pick the Pros.
That's Boyd?
That was the Boyd group. And I've been saying this. I've been beating this drum for years, telling people, this thing is worth playing if you play it right. And people go, there's so many players. There's like tens of thousands of players, if not 100,000 players in this contest. So typically, when you have a week where things go according to the way the lines are set and people are picking favorites, you could be splitting with 200-300 people. So when you play those things, you literally got to pick two or three, you know, well, one or two big underdogs. I had an underdog. I picked the card, and I had two dogs of seven or more, and another dog of three and a half, and another smaller dog. So I had four dogs, and two of them were huge dogs, one nine, I think. And I still tied. We still tied with 12 other players. But because there's $30,000 a week in this contest, it turned out there was one on one side, 12 of us on the other. The one side lost, the 12 of us split the money, and there was still something like an $1,800 profit on this. So while we did lose at all the big money contests, we did make a little bit back on this quickie, you know, for free one. And I've been saying it for years, they're worth playing, but you got to play them right. You can't pick favorites when you play those kind of contests.
Yeah, see, strategy-wise, I understand what he's saying. You know, the big game that you're worried about is the Monday night game, how you handle it. Are you going to take the favorite and set yourself up for where you can lock in some money? You'll be able to lock in some money. If you got the favorite, you could take the points on Monday night and guarantee that you're going to get something back, maybe get the whole, you know, possibly get the whole thing. And I understand what Curtis is saying about, you know, you got to pick some dogs. But the card that he just described, he picked a lot of dogs on Sunday. And with that type of – if I'd have made those picks, I'd have said, wow, I got plenty of dogs here. If I just make it through Sunday, I might be the only one on Monday anyway. And the fact that there were 13 going in, that's surprising. Like, if it were me, I would have taken the favorite on Monday night because he had so many dogs on there. But, like, I have no idea what the volume is that they get on those freebies, but it has to be pretty – huge to have 13 perfect cards, yeah, with five dogs, and like two or three are pretty significant.
Well, the reason people want to take the dogs, which is always, see, that's where I learned something with the basic strategy is that, you know, people, you want to pick the dog so you can try to middle it on the end. You know, on the end, you can try to, or have I got that backwards? Wait a minute. No. You take the favorite so you can middle it with the dog. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did have the favorite. I had the fave. There was only one guy on the dog on the other side.
No, but you're saying you should have. You were sort of implying.
I should have been on the other side.
You should have had the dog on Monday night, and it was saying, like, you did exactly.
Yeah, but I think we learned this now, that people lean to the favorites so much that if you're going to split no matter what, on the Monday night thing, I think you got to take the dog. I mean, that's what I learned. I would always take the favorite so you can try to middle it with the dog on Monday. So you cover yourself.
Well, if you take the dog, you can still middle it, right?
Well, it's not as easy. It's not as easy. I mean,
you're going to have to play a money line where you're laying out money, and you could, you know.
But anyway, my point on this is that you should play those things when they come up next year. We're not that far away. Football will be here before you know it. You should play those things, and you've got to pick. The very next week was a big favorite thing. I went and checked it, and there were 400 and some people were tied.
Yeah, see, I don't know what the volume is. It's got to be huge. And like what you were saying, you could middle it. You can't middle it if you take the dog, because you can't win both ends. You know, you're going to have to.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Then the reason that's so attractive is to take a favorite on Monday night. You could take plus four with the dog, and if it's a close game, your card wins, your hedge bet wins. And, of course, it's the most popular strategy. And the card, like I said, the card he described, that had enough dogs on it where I would have been real comfortable taking the favorite. Now, if you go all faves on Sunday, there's the perfect time. Say, hey, I'm going to take a lot of chalk on Sunday, but I'm taking the dog on Monday night, because if this card gets there, there's going to be a herd of people with me, and I want to be on the other side.
I still don't think you can even do that, because you're still going to end up with so many people that you've got to, when you play those things, you've got to pick two or three big dogs to have a shot. And it'll happen. It'll take a long time, but, you know, it happened.
Good. $1,800 every 180 years, that comes out to what?
You know, I think it's got to be the kind of thing that, A, you frequent the Boyd casinos anyway, and B, I think you have to be, you know, really kind of be into it.
Yeah.
You know, where you like to watch. Yeah, I mean, if you're into football anyway, then yeah, why not pick them?
There's nothing like the sweat of that. I'm telling you, I've been saying this for years. One of the things that's great about it is that when you go perfect in the morning, you get all excited. Even me knowing, you know, if I go perfect in the morning, I still know how difficult it's going to be to go perfect in the afternoon and how many people I'm probably going to be tied with. And I still start getting a little excited about it. So the average player that goes out, if he's going to be there, you should play that contest just for the sweat of it. It's really worthwhile.
All right. Anthony, before the show, you were telling us about an expert witness opportunity that you had with Bob Nersessian. Can you share something about that?
Yeah, that was an interesting, you know, in my business, I get to do a lot of fun things. And this was, could have been one of the cool things. Bob called me on a Tuesday morning and asked me if I was busy, you know, Tuesday afternoon. Well, that's about, you know, 100%. Yes, I'm busy, you know. And I said, what do you have in mind? And he said, well, I wondered if you wanted to come and be an expert witness at a hearing with Gaming Control. And so I asked him what it was about, and it was about a customer that would not cash his chips because he came in with too many chips based on what they thought he had. The customer's position was that he goes south or rat holes chips, meaning he puts chips away when the bosses aren't looking in order to heighten his look as a loser. All right. He doesn't want them to see him walking and winning all the time. He wants his profile to be as a loser or winning less than he does. I told Bob, says, does that happen? You know, knowing full well that it does. I says, of course it happens. It happens all the time. So he said, well, would you like to come and testify? Can you do that? I said, well, who's the client? And he told me a name that I didn't know. So that didn't matter to me. So I was still a no there. And I asked who was the defendant, and he mentioned a casino that I don't like. So I said, absolutely, I'll be there. And I wanted to go and stick it to that casino.
I have casinos that I would do that for.
Right, exactly. So I got there, and I got to gaming, and I got into the hallway, and I was showing my ID, and I was about to walk into the room. Now, this is important. It wasn't a courtroom. It was just a room down at where the Gaming Control Board is, because I was going to talk to a board. This was a hearing. This was not a trial. And Bob came out, and he said, thanks for coming. You can go home now. He goes, they're not going to let you talk. So I never did get to do this. This would have been neat. That would have been another new thing that I would have done is testifying in front of gaming.
Another notch in your belt.
That would have been cool. I would have liked it. But the interesting thing to me was, first of all, that I don't know what the rules are, and I don't know why, and I still haven't talked to Bob to find out. You can ask him next time he's on the show.
Uh-huh.
But why? Was it some sort of discovery thing that they weren't made aware, that they weren't able to prepare the other side? I don't know. But I just know I was not allowed to speak to them. Second is that this would ever be in dispute at all, that people actually go south with chips and that this isn't a common activity.
I mean, every person who works in a casino knows this happens. They're just, you know, this is what casinos do now. They just refuse to pay people. I mean,
well, yeah, this, like I said, this is a casino I'm not happy with, that I don't love. And we hear more and more about this kind of stuff, which I think is just absolutely ridiculous. Anything not to pay. And yes, people do that all the time. This goes all the way back. You know, Bob's asking me, you know, he's basically deposing me as we're on the phone so he can see what I'm going to say. But he goes, has this been common knowledge that players do this for long? I go, well, we published a book called Comp City that gave this information in two chapters, Hide Chips and Look Like a Loser. That's what were the name of the chapters. And he goes, and when was that book published? And
I said,
1994. You know, so yes, this has been common knowledge for a very long time. And to say that this doesn't happen, I think is absolutely you know, absurd.
It just sickens me. I just, you know, all you can do is shake your head. Like,
there was a... We're going to take a brief commercial break, and when we get back, we're going to ask Anthony a follow-up question on this about a situation, a story that Max Rubin tells about a $5 lady who was up $60,000 because of this. So we'll be right back.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In February, there will be $600,000 Crazy Cupid's Money Madness. There'll be two casino-wide progressives going at all times. One starts at $10,000 and must hit before $25,000. In addition to the one lucky winner each time, anybody playing when this jackpot goes off receives $25 in free play. The smaller jackpot begins at $1,000 and must be hit prior to $2,500. The smaller jackpot averages going off three times a day. This coming Monday, February 19th, President's Day, there'll be double points all day, which means 0.6%, midnight to midnight, no limits on video poker. Slot and real players receive five times points, which means 1.5%. The seventh week of free video poker classes for Tuesday, February 20th, beginning at noon, is NSU Deuces Wild. The game returns slightly more than 99.7%, making it an even bet 24/7 at the South Point, given the 0.3 slot club, and a positive game if you include the promotions and mailers. NSU is a relatively simple game, and as such, this class is quite suitable for beginners. Even if you've attended no prior classes previously this semester, you may jump in here because the principles of Deuces Wild are very different from the principles of games without hide cards, so we'll basically be starting from the beginning again. There will be an immediate class at 2 o'clock. The following week, we'll be teaching the advanced NSU. For that class, you had best have taken the classes the week before, or at least know the material presented. The classes are free, and if you're at least 21 years of age, you're welcome. The Silverado Lounge is the first one you come to when you reach the casino via the parking elevators. VideoPoker.com, best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Ultimate X Poker. This is a popular game of the week here. It's a 10 coins per line game where your score on this hand is a product of the result of this hand multiplied by whatever multiplier you earned on the last hand. The correct strategy is a mixture of how much you get on this hand and what multipliers you're going to be earning.
We're back talking to Frank B. and Anthony Curtis about the people actually do rat hole. And Max Rubin tells a story about a $5
well,
better.
Yeah, I don't want to mention the casino, but there was a casino that where this woman who was a regular player and a $5 better wanted to bar this woman because they had seen she'd been playing for years and was a $60,000 lifetime winner. And, you know, they decided she had to be cheating or doing something if she could win that much money betting $5. And after some...
Hell of a player.
Yeah, hell of a player. After some investigation, they found that... I mean, she was in the casino all the time, playing many hours a day, and whenever they would come and count the rack, whenever there were chips that couldn't be accounted for, they just put it on her card. So yeah. So she had accumulated a $60,000 lifetime win.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, this was the kind of the crux, you know, part two of what I would have talked about, you know, to gaming, is that the accounting procedures on the fly just aren't, they're just not accurate. And, you know, the situation with this woman and that Max talks about is just somebody who was an easy person when whenever they wanted to count the rack, if she was there, maybe a big player just left with chips or whatever, and they put it on her. Right. And I mean, over time, you can't be a $5 player and accumulate a $60,000 win. You just can't do that. You can't do that over a decade. You can't do that over a decade and a half. It's just not going to happen. But they don't care because these accounting systems are not that strong. They're not that tight. And that's where it goes back to the argument about did this person walk with chips? Well, of course he did. He admits that's what he did. That was part of his whole act and play and the way that his program. And for them to say that you know their accounting is perfect and they know that he didn't walk with chips, it's foolish. It makes no sense.
Richard, you used to play a lot of table games. When's the best time to rat hole chips?
Yeah, well, exactly what we're talking about. The time you want to rat hole chips is when somebody gets up and leaves the table. And then the boss comes over and says, "What did the guy walk with?" And I would always say, "Oh, he had a whole bunch of blacks," you know, because I had just stuck 10 or 15 of them in my pocket.
Anybody who thought of playing with Richard would be a good idea. Just has more information now.
Yeah. Well, and I would target tables that had two or three players who were betting black chips. I would go to that table not to try to play with an edge, specifically to go to that table, buy in for $2,000 in cash, and over the course of 30 minutes go south with $2,000 or whatever, and it's going to get distributed among all the guys there.
Yeah, you know, another possibility other than, you know, just the one given so far is that, you know, there's a lot of games being played with floor people in the pit. And, you know, I became aware of it at one point. You know, I would always, when I had a big loss, you know, want to make sure that I'm getting credit for it. So after a while, I start asking, you know, how come I don't have any comps available on this game? And it was I lost this much on this day. Go, well, we don't show that. And I had somebody pull me aside and say, you know what they do here is they take the losses, and if you're not on top of it, they give your loss to their friends so they can get comps. And so if that's going on, which I have no doubt is there in other places, why wouldn't it be the opposite? You know, some guy that has a win that doesn't want it on his card, and they put it on somebody else's card, you know, to make everything add up probably. She could have, because it sounds like that's a lot of miscalculation. 60,000, and it never went the wrong way. It's always against her.
For a $5 player.
Right. So maybe someone's tacking wins on her account for some reason.
Yeah. Impreciseness is what it comes down to. You know, I should mention that right after this happened, just by coincidence, there was on gamblingwithanedge.com, you know, from which this show emanates, and you guys are on there and all, there was a discussion. We got something called Behind the Curtain, and Andy Yule, who is a boss at a strip casino, made some comments on this, which were a little bit controversial. Does this really happen? Essentially, what Andy was also saying is that the accounting is imprecise, and you can get stuck with it either way. It can work good for you or work bad for you. You got to be real careful. It's a minefield.
When I was playing for comps, I would always, when I got up from the table, I would always call the boss over, say, how much did you have me in? What did you have my average bet? You know, and make sure that they were giving me credit for everything I had rattled. You know, yeah. And sometimes you can argue with them about the size of the average bet they're giving you. Because a lot of times, they don't care, a lot of them. You know, they wrote something down. They don't want to.
Yeah, they wrote your first bet size down, and then they walked away.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Which was, all right, go back to all the way back to Comp City. If you're playing for comps, make sure that first bet is a big one.
And you know what? I mean, I had, you know, when some bosses like you and some bosses don't, right? So I had a boss who I knew liked me. I was leaving the table. I said, what do you have my average bet at? And he said, what do you want? And I said, well, I just bet two hands of 1,000. He was like, okay, 2,000. Wrote that down as my average bet. You know, so
head right to the restaurant.
That was the boss who did like you or didn't. Okay,
yeah,
Anthony Curtis, anything happening for members of LVA that is worth talking about?
Well, I mean, like every time this year, the thing that everybody cares about, you know, I could do everything or nothing all year long, but as long as I get a good member rewards book, that's what everybody really cares about. I write the Las Vegas Advisor. No one reads it. They just want to know.
They just want the book.
They want to know. That's what they say. They go, I listen to our operators and they go, well, it comes with a newsletter. And they go, I don't care about a newsletter. I just want the book. That's what they say. The member rewards book, as it has been for the last several years, you know, which has put us on the map, is very, very good this year. We had a $25 match play from the Lucky Dragon. That's no longer good, but everything else is pretty powerful. What was interesting this year, which was my, you know, got my goat this year, is every year it gets tougher and tougher to work with the strip casinos. And this year was brutal. This year was brutal. And I mean, by the strip casinos, I mean all the big guys, especially MGM Grand. To another degree, Caesars at least plays ball a little bit. Cosmopolitan was kind of cool. They tightened up a little bit on some rules on how we use a coupon for them for their Wicked Spoon. But it's just getting tougher and tougher with the big guys. They're getting more and more smug. They don't want to give up a thing. And I mean, the customers just got to realize this. I mean, you see it in resort fees. You see it in paying for parking. You see it in video poker schedules. You see it in allocations, you know, for comp drinks and things like that.
They could give you some, you know, free parking coupons, right?
I said, geez, if you don't want to do anything at all, I go, well, how about a day of free parking? Ha, ha, ha. You know, I was kind of making a half joke, and they stared at me like, you know, daggers, like, how dare you? Like, why would we do that? And I'm telling you, they're, you know, I know those weren't sponsors of the show, so I named them. But I mean, just in general, I don't have to name them. The big strip casinos are getting tougher and tougher, and the customer needs to understand that. Boo.
So what's in the book that's...
The book, well, I'll tell you what. The book is, you know, anybody who wants to, who spends their time at places like the downtown casinos. The downtown is unbelievable. There's, you know, there's one of everything downtown. There's one casino that's not in it, and it's the one casino that wants to act like a strip casino. And that's the Golden Nugget. Yeah. It's the Golden Nugget. I mean, they've been like that for years. It's like pulling teeth with the Golden Nugget. And this year, they just said, "No, we're not going to be."
See, Derek's the man down there. He plays ball with everybody.
Yeah,
you know?
Derek Stevens and what, you know, the D and the Golden Gate and El Cortez and all of those. Other is, you know. You can say whatever you want. People who don't like some of the locals and the big players, locals. Station Casinos is unbelievable. Station Casinos is, they are the most generous when it comes to wanting the customers that we have in the book. Great coupons, 2-for-1s to all their buffets, including the new all-you-can-eat buffet at the Palms, now that they've taken over the Palms, including the $50 off 100 at the Palms. You know, Station could have come in here and said, we don't want to do that. And they're like, no, we're rolling with your people. We want your people. Station's great. Boyd's been great. You know, a lot of the small places like Eureka, Emerald Island, a lot of these joints, very, very good. So, you know, I'm very happy with locals casinos. I'm very happy with downtown casinos. It's just the strip is really getting on my nerves.
Any new books from Huntington Press?
The most recent is the food book that we do every year, or we have done every year, Eating Las Vegas 2018. That we were talking about that earlier today, me and some friends. You know, that's just a book that I think anyone who wants to go out to eat in Vegas ought to get. What we're working on right now, we've got a new edition of Mike Shackelford's book almost ready to come out. His Gambling 102.
Is this going to be Gambling 103?
Nope. We're going to keep it Gambling 102. And, you know, we discussed that. Should it be Gambling 103? And we're like, no, we're going to keep it, you know, Gambling 102. And it's just updated with the whole, you know, bringing it up to date with new things that are going on and some of the old stuff, you know, Casino War, you don't see it anymore, or pull it out of the book, you know, or put it in an appendix, something like that. So we got Shackelford's new book. The main thing is we've got, as of right now, the number vacillates, but we've got 6 or 7 books on sports betting that are in production right now, because we all know what's about to happen with the Supreme Court. And we've got some tremendous books on sports betting. One even threatened by Frank B. Threatened, I say, because
threatened.
I'll believe it when I see it. But I've seen some of it, and it's really beautiful.
Any think Frank B. would go on the record with telling when it's coming out? Or
listen, when football season comes, then you know, certain things have to take priority, so things slow down. But you know, it's tentatively titled Advantage Sports Betting, and it's. You know, it's a lot of the stuff that we've discussed on the shows in the past. Basically, using basic strategy to go about winning money betting sports. So it's a lot less handicapping type material and a lot more of, you know, fundamentals and, you know, how it is that you should start building your infrastructure for betting sports.
Here's another just to finish that off.
Good book.
We just also signed it might be the first sports book that we have come out. We're doing both sides of the table here. I mean, we're working with guys like Frank and the players, and we're working with some of the sportsbook guys themselves. We've got a deal with Art Manteras, who did Superbookie a long time ago. That book's been under a contract for a while, and it's still in the works because it's a big book. But we also signed Chris Andrews from South Point, who is a sportsbook director there, for a book called Then One Day. And it's cool. And what we're going to do with that book, it's a lot of stories. It's stories that tell stories that you kind of get information out of. But it's also going to be a book that talks a lot about sportsbook jargon. We're going to make sure that anyone who reads that book is going to understand the language of sports betting.
You have any thoughts about assuming that the Supreme Court legalizes this? Do you have any plans how you're going to – any ideas about what you might be looking for that might be particularly good? I mean, are you thinking about getting apartments in different states or?
Well, you know, a lot of guys are excited about it, and they have plans, definite plans, and they're based on all kinds of assumptions. You know, assumptions that this will be available. Assumptions that, you know, they'll end up booking their own bets, or they'll be offering exchanges. And they don't take any of the negatives into account, like what might that maybe there'll be a tax on winnings, maybe they'll be, you know, restricted to certain types. I mean, you don't know what they're going to come out with yet, so I'm sort of going to be reactionary here. We'll see what happens, and then you take a look at it. And like I said, you know, when you have the basics and the fundamentals down, you should be able to take a look at something and go, okay, this looks pretty good. From this perspective, this is the way, if there's anything to make at this place, this is the way to go about it. So, you know, to get all geared up for something that may not happen for a while and that you don't know what the details are going to be about it, you know, it's like walking into a casino. Let's see what they got. Okay, this looks good. Let's go at it.
Right. But you have to be kind of willing to jump right away sometimes, especially when a new opportunity – you know, a new casino opens, something new happens, you know, a lot of times.
Change your everyday life to make way for that. Well,
yeah.
I guess if it's good enough, I mean, you know, a lot of guys would do it. Say, hey, honey, pick up the house. We're going to Beverly.
The problem is it's really convoluted right now, and nobody knows what's going to happen. And every week there's a new, you know, monkey wrench thrown into it. You know, the most recent being the NBA's ridiculous statement that they want 1% of all the money bet, meaning 1% of the handle. Well, you know, if that were to happen, then get ready for laying 120. You're not going to lay 11 to win 10 anymore.
Is that what they mean by that?
Yes.
Or they just want 1% of the action?
They want 1% of all action, all bets. They want 1%
the of action, all, action, or the gross from
no,
the bets?
No, all action.
Oh, so they want the 1% goes to them.
Yes.
And then that's it.
Which
then
equates,
it's not like they're booking 1%.
Yeah, which equates with like a 22%.
Oh, no, that's
of
bad.
Biting into the profit by about 22%.
But why would anyone give them that?
Well, you know, I put a blog up and I said, who the hell needs the NBA? I mean, really, who needs the NBA? I don't need your permission to bet on your games. And besides, you're benefiting. The more people that bet, the more people watch your games, the stickier your games are, meaning people are going to watch longer. Are you kidding me? We don't need you. And you're going to demand this? You know, and they're calling it an integrity fee. Really? Integrity. You know, this is insane. Like, they're going to be the ones. They're actually saying that we need to make money so we can police this. They're not going to police anything. You know, the sports books are going to police this. They want to be bookmakers. You know, I mean, that's what I wrote. National Bookmakers Association, not NBA.
And if they want 1%, the NFL will want 5%.
Well, they'll all want a piece. And, you know, you just can't operate that way. These guys, there's been some really great. Vic Salerno, you know, who was the guy who started Leroy's, wrote a really good piece about it. And a lot of others have come on saying, this just can't be. And, you know, all of the guys are really coming out. I heard Jay Cornegay the other day, and Jay's very, you know, he's the sports director at Westgate. And Jay's very politically correct. He doesn't get real opinionated because, it's not in his best interest to, but he came flat out and said, this is ludicrous. He goes, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
But isn't that the path that it's going to go anyway? Because when the money's out there to be had, they're going to, I mean, when Vegas, like 30 years ago, wasn't there a tax? That made it like almost unplayable.
Yeah,
in sports. And they had to get more reasonable with things. So listen, there's nothing here for either side because you're dragging too much out of the pot.
Yeah. So this takes it all around full circle to your first question. Are we excited about it? Well, there's not going to be any opportunity if you're laying 12 or 13 to 10. You're just not going to do it. You're going to go right back to the offshores. They're going to shoot themselves in the foot. The thing that they're supposed to be stopping is going to be, you know, it's like prohibition. You know, people go right back to the bootleggers. That's the way it's going to happen. If somebody doesn't get a hold of somebody. The problem with this, boy, you hit my button here, right? Here you go. I'm so into the sports thing.
We're happy to hit your button. Bouncing off the ceiling. Now, Narcissi will bounce off the ceiling. You haven't quite bounced yet, but keep going.
But the problem with this is that everyone thinks it's just easy, that you just put your shingle out there and you just rake in money. They don't understand how difficult bookmaking can actually be and that there are costs associated with it and that the edge is relatively small. And they just say, give us, until they eliminate because they don't understand, just like it's happened over and over again. They do not understand the business of gambling. You have people who do not understand the business of gambling trying to tell you how it's going to be because they've got some kind of leverage and it's just not going to work.
Yeah, well, the other problem with that too is that because it's difficult, we don't want to end up with like William Hill having the concession all across the country. And
if that happens, that's the other thing. If there's no competition, then it ain't going to make a shred of difference. If William Hill or Cantor or Bodog or whoever it may be, it ain't going to be them. But I mean, who's the other? Paddy Power. Paddy Power. What a Paddy Powerhouse they are.
Yeah.
If one of these takes it and they get the concession, well, big deal. It's Monopoly. It's not going to be any good. What's going to be good is if it's different state by state and there's all kind of different opportunities that you can go out there and shop. And somehow you get to a point where that for liquidity, you can bet across state lines and all that, then it's going to be good. Agree?
I agree. And I agree that we all four of us sitting in this room right now think like Advantage players, and the majority of people interested in getting into this for money don't. They don't care if we play. They don't care if we get turned off by minus $1.12. That's not what they'll happily, just like William Hill and Paddy Power that you just mentioned over in the UK. I spent a little bit of time over there. They don't charge $1.10 except for a few things. Most stuff is $1, 30 cent straddles, 40 cent straddles. They're fine with that. They get the exact type of customer competency wise that they want, and they're doing just fine. Because there's no competition doing anything other than that. There's nobody in there where you can lay $1.08 or $1.10. And if that's the way
thing. Well, Betfair, right?
Betfair, yeah. Exchange. That's the exchange, though.
Yeah.
It's different. That's a service. It's not a book. It's not a book. So maybe it's got to be something along those lines. But as far as, setting up shop and say, hey, we're taking bets, they gouge and they don't care if the sharp guys don't play. I don't know that matters that much to them, that they're competitive, as long as nobody else more competitive comes into the market and says, hey, we're going to show you how it's done. But then
you get into a situation like they hit with DFS, where, or they're going to hit with blackjack, 6 to 5 and even money on naturals, or poker, the poker craze, piddling out because people are losing too fast,
Right.
And I mean, if people, they start raising in the VIGs too much, people are going to lose too fast, and they're going to look at it at the end of a season and go, I can do without that. You got to be careful here.
Yeah, because the public will fall, they'll go along with it from the most. We were just talking about, they'll pay for parking. They say they don't like it, but they're going to do it. Here's 6 to 5, but we can go play 3 to 2 over here. But the dancing girls are right here. Oh, we'll pay 6 to 5, So, I mean, it's not like they don't have these things figured out.
I think still money trumps it. And if they're looking and it's costing them too much, I think they walk.
You got to have competition to force them to square up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Frank B. Thank you, Anthony Curtis. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Dancing girls or no.
Good day.